Harper Perennial and Harper Audio present A Crowning Mercy, a novel by Bernard Cornwell and Susanna Kells, performed by Julia Franklin.
Prologue, 1633. The boat slammed into a wave. Wind howled in the rigging and brought water stinging down the treacherous deck, driving the shuddering timbers into the next roller.
"Captain, you take the bloody mast out of her!"
The captain ignored his helmsman.
"You're mad, Captain!"
Of course he was mad. He was proud of it, laughing at it, loving it. His crew shook their heads. Some crossed themselves. Others, Protestants, just prayed. The captain had been a poet once, before all the troubles, and all poets were touched in the head. He shortened sail an hour later, letting the ship go into irons so that it jerked and rolled on the waves as he walked to the stern rail. He stared through the rain and windspray, stared for a long while at a low, black land. His crew said nothing, though each man knew the sea room they would need to weather the low, dark headland. They watched their captain. Finally, he walked back to the helmsman. His face was quieter now, sadder.
"Weather her now,
Captain."
They passed close enough to see the iron basket atop the pole that was the Lizard's beacon. The Lizard. For many, this was their last sight of England. For too many, it was their last sight of any land before their ships were crushed by the great Atlantic. This was the captain's farewell. He watched the Lizard till it was hidden in the storm, and still he watched, as though it might suddenly reappear between the squalls. He was leaving. He was leaving a child he had never seen. He was leaving her a fortune she might never see. He was leaving her, as all parents must leave their children. But this child he had abandoned before birth, and all that wealth he had left her did not assuage his shame. He had abandoned her, as he now abandoned all the lives that he had touched and stained. He was going to a place where he promised himself he could start again, where the sadness he was leaving could be forgotten. He took only one thing of his shame. Beneath his sea clothes, hung about his neck, was a golden chain. He had been the enemy of one king and the friend of another. He had been called the handsomest man in Europe, and still, despite prison, despite wars, he was impressive. He took one last backward look, and then England was gone. His daughter was left behind to life. Part 1. The Seal of St. Matthew. Chapter 1. She first met Toby Lassender on a day that seemed a foretaste of heaven. England slumbered under the summer heat. The air was heavy with the scent of wild basil and marjoram, and she sat where purple loosestrife grew at the stream's edge. She thought she was alone. She looked about her like an animal searching for enemies, nervous because she was about to sin. She was sure she was alone. She looked left, where the path came from the house through the hedge of Top Meadow, but no one was there. She stared at the great ridge across the stream, but nothing moved among the trunks of heavy beeches or in the water meadows beneath them. The land was hers. 3 years before, when she'd been 17, and her mother dead 1 year, this sin had seemed monstrous beyond imagination. She had feared then that this might be the mysterious sin against the Holy Ghost. A sin so terrible that the Bible could not describe it, except to say it could not be forgiven. Yet still she had been driven to commit it. Now, 3 summers later, familiarity had taken away some of her fear. Yet she still knew that she sinned. She took off her bonnet and laid it carefully in the wide wooden basket in which she would carry back the rushes from the pool. Her father, a wealthy man, insisted that she worked, St. Paul, he said, had been a tent maker.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?